Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. It is a Thursday and it's the 20th of December, and I don't know. We're ready for a holiday, I guess. We're getting there. Hopefully everybody is in a good mood. We've got a lot of topics to discuss that will probably depress you, but we'll do our best to get through them all. Let me introduce everyone. Also, a reminder, you can join in on the conversation, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me go through the group here. Vera Acarius-Kelly joins us. She is Siena College. She's a professor of comparative politics at Siena College. And good morning, Vera. It's very nice to have you here.
Good morning. So it's great to be here.
So nice to see you. We have lots of questions to ask you. Okay. Jim Hendler is here. He's the Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI. Jim, good morning. We have lots to talk to you about, too.
Yeah, a few things today.
All right. Thank you very much for being here. Ira Fussville joins us, Daily Freeman Publisher Emeritus, fresh from a taping of The Media Project. You survived.
Very interesting program this week. I urge people to listen. 6 o'clock Sunday, 3 o'clock Monday, right here in WAMC.
Was there anything on it? Was there anything on it that was particularly interesting to you?
Yes, actually, there was. We talked about advertiser boycotts and the worth of columnists. It was very lively.
Was that the Tucker Carlson conversation?
We did. Yes, we talked about that. Yeah.
Good. All sounds good. Alan Chartok is with us as well. Alan, is there anything particularly exciting on the program you'd like to tell us about?
Well, we did have a very interesting discussion as to what the relationship between editors and columnists should be. So in other words, if an editor didn't like something that you were writing, was it an entitlement to call you up and give you a hard time?
Now, let me see. Now, so you would have played the columnist in this equation.
I would say so.
And Barbara Lombardo, I assume, played the editor role as well as Rex.
Well, we had three editors in there. We had Ira. We had...
Well,
but I'm more of a publisher.
You were a publisher.
Right. But before that, he was a long-time editor.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And so we had three editors. But everybody, I think it was a very balanced conversation.
Three against one?
Well, no, not really.
No, but you could play the other role because I know that a former no longer alive commentator on this station drew a lot of negative comments, and you very frequently stood up for him.
Always.
Saying his point of view was worth having on the station.
I didn't agree with a thing that Herb London said, who is who you're talking about, yes. Of course. I didn't believe a thing he said, but I thought it was so important that he have licensure to say what he wanted.
Much like on the panel when we occasionally have some of the others who disagree with most of us.
Much like what I do at the Berkshire Eagle, for example.
When we occasionally, yes.
Occasionally.
Well, good morning. Let's get to it. Let's start the topics at large, and there are many. So we begin with Syria. The president has announced a withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria, declaring, quote, "We have won against ISIS." President Trump has ordered the withdrawal of 2,000 American troops from Syria, bringing a sudden end to a military campaign that largely vanquished the Islamic State, but ceding a strategically vital country to Russia and Iran, and overruling his generals and civilian advisors. So imagine that. You have all your advisors, you have all your generals, they all meet and they say, I don't think you should do this. And he does it anyway. He fulfilled his frequently expressed desire to bring home American forces from a messy foreign entanglement. But his decision, conveyed via Twitter on Wednesday, plunges the administration's Middle East strategy into disarray, rattling allies like Britain and Israel and forsaking Syria's ethnic Kurds, who have been faithful partners in fighting the Islamic State.
Vera? Another great example of Trump loyalty to anybody or anything. Which it doesn't exist.
So let me start this conversation by making three key points. Everybody else can already think about why Trump is making the decision, but I want to talk a little bit about what's going on the ground. So number one, the U.S. foreign policy strategy in Syria has been built around this idea of containing Iran and making sure Iranian forces don't move in and further control the region. By withdrawing troops from that part of the country, That strategy no longer appears to be central to U.S. foreign policy. So containment of Iran doesn't seem to be central now. Astounding. Number two, as Joe mentioned, the issue of the Kurds. They have been our loyal on-the-ground militia fighting alongside, you know, American troops, mostly American air support, against ISIS on the ground. We, in effect, appear to be abandoning our on-the-ground allies with this withdrawal. It seems very unclear what's going to happen with the Kurds because they will be exposed to major regional powers who will try to carry out assaults against them. The Kurds themselves, and I've been in touch with a number of them yesterday, various groups all over the world, because that's one of my areas of research, they're fearing a potential genocide. Then my third point is ISIS is not entirely defeated. ISIS can reconstitute itself fairly quickly. It's not that all ISIS fighters have simply been arrested or disappeared. They can reemerge out of various Sunni regions, as well as foreign fighters are available. So, on three points, I'm deeply worried. In addition, one wonders why Trump will withdraw troops unilaterally without any discussion, when in effect he seems to be opening up the entire region for this sort of new nexus, which is the Iranian-Russian-Syrian control. Very disturbing. In addition, the area where U.S. troops are is the one area of Syria, the northeast, where there is some oil. All around, it is a very worrisome policy.
Now, Vera, I happen to think, you and I don't always agree on everything,
We got that.
I think it was a brilliant exposition of what was going on, what you just said. But it raises, the last thing you said raises an interesting question. Here's Trump under investigation for collaborating with the Russians. And now he's giving Putin everything he wants, which is total control in Syria, and we're out of there. Does one and one make two?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm going to leave that up to everybody else, because I'm just not clear on what is going on here. If he's just trying to redirect attention at the end of the year or something else. But in effect, I'm very concerned about this very question of what drives Trump's foreign policy. It certainly doesn't seem to be based on a well thought out, comprehensive Middle East strategy. That's what I can say. It'll cause enormous violence, added violence. I mean, it's not like it's the United States has sort of stabilized some areas of Syria. But what will happen afterwards is the caving in of some areas and massacres.
But from all reports, he has not talked to either his own Secretary of Defense,
yes,
Mattis, about this, or his incredible, Secretary of State, Pompeo, about this.
So that's the stunning thing. He started out with a bunch of generals, and he said, I'm surrounding myself with these people who understand foreign policy and things like that, my generals. And he's now fired all but one of them, and that one told him not to do this, and he's doing it anyway. So, Syria has been a mess for a long time. I was at the World Economic Forum. I was lucky enough to be a speaker there a few years ago, and ran into some people from some Syrian NGOs, and we had a long discussion, and I was trying to explain, sort of U.S. really was, Obama was trying to avoid going into another law, but it was pretty clear we were doing things wrong, and we had to do something. So it was a mess. And I think what happened is towards the end of the Obama administration, at least they stabilized the mess. They got things clear. What we've been doing there has really been, maintaining a stasis, providing actually some of the stuff we should be providing. So pulling out now, suddenly take, all the things Vera said, it takes this thing we kind of had at least contained the mess, and now lets it just go crazy again and gives, again, the Russians to whatever they need.
Well, I'm overwhelmed by the acknowledgement of my panelists here, so I feel feel sheepish about what I'm going to say, and that's just simply it appears that the only conclusion that I can draw is he's doing this to be distracting from everything else that's going on around him, and there seems to be no evidence that he's thought this or much less of anything through. I mean, he did make this a campaign promise. He talked about it as recently as April that this was going to happen. So in that respect, it's not a surprise.
Yeah, but Ira, the question to you is, what about the possibility that he's doing this because, Putin has him in a very strategic place?
And Putin praised him this morning. Mm-hmm. So without a doubt, I can think of no intellectual reason that he might have had for doing what he's doing. And then when you hear comments like those from Vera and Jim and Alan, we're talking about the wrong guy. This is a guy who is flailing. It appears, and this is a very dangerous development.
I would say what we can forecast is this: if the troops, even though there are not that many, I think it's around 2,000. If troops are withdrawn under the current, plan of immediate withdrawal without any discussion, without any military planning for that, we know that political divisions will sharpen in the region. We will know that the prospects for a political solution are dimming, and that it is likely that Turkish President Erdogan will order a military invasion of northern Syria, of the Kurdish-controlled autonomous regions, which will create mayhem, bloodshed,
and the Washington Post reported that Erdogan and Trump spoke on the phone.
Right. There seems to be some kind of a deal. Now, the other question, of course, is, will Assad, of course, is hostile to Turkey, will then Syria and Turkey engage in warfare as well, and how will that draw in Russia? So everything, and then of course the Iranians will benefit from the entire development, and they will become deeply engaged. They're already controlling parts of Iraq, of course, because they have troops on the ground, and now they're going to move more heavily into Syria. I mean, it will be an implosion. Now, I'm not a fan of U.S. troops stationed everywhere in the world. I'm in favor of a reduction of U.S. foreign policy that involves military occupation in a number of foreign countries. However, in this case, I think I understand that the eventual withdrawal is essential. However, you need to discuss it. You need to consult with your military experts. You have to have a comprehensive Middle East policy. And you certainly must be figuring out how to go about it with your local allies, Kurdish militias, other militia groups, as well as European allies. How can you abandon all the people that have been fighting alongside the U.S. in the region and then open yourself up for a reconstitution of ISIS? This is so appalling. I don't know what to say.
Now, Vera, we only have a couple of seconds before we have to go to a break. I know Joe's going to shake his finger at us. And I just want to make sure.
It has nothing to do with that.
But I just want to make sure I ask you historically. It is my unsophisticated view, based on what I've been seeing, that this mess we're in Syria was already resolved. Assad has won. Is that wrong?
Well, I mean, in some ways, Assad has regained a power position, which is really disturbing because he's a brutal butcher.
Yep.
I mean, that man should have never been able to return to his position of power. The Russians allowed him to return.
Yep.
So here we have a horrible man who we found out just days ago that a Syrian American woman from the Chicago area, a human rights worker, was tortured and murdered in a prison in Syria. Now, the Trump administration apparently does not seem to pay any attention or doesn't even care that a U.S. citizen was treated that way. Where are we?
So is this the final straw for those Republicans who have been sticking with Trump? There certainly has been quite a bit of outrage expressed by them.
Certainly Lindsey Graham, if he's any example of it, That would be right. He's just furious, as are Corker and so many of the other people who were involved in the foreign policy apparatus of the United States Congress. But, you know, one wonders about Lindsey Graham all the time.
Yeah, that's let's pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussville, Jim Hendler, and Vera Karius-Kelly will be back right after this short break. Santa, make him hurry. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 20th of December, 35 minutes past 9 o'clock. Vera Karius-Kelly is here, Jim Hendler, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Chartok, who has letters and will begin reading them right now.
Okay, thanks, boss. War, says Janos. Dear Alan and the panel, have we not be warmonging long enough? I guess it's
Before you send.
Because otherwise I look even stupider than I am. Is the Democratic Party not supposed to be an advocate of peace at all times? If you are pro-war, then make your children go fight for your cause. Don't keep asking others to sacrifice for your neoliberal political agenda. And that's from Janos in Great Barrington.
Have you heard a full-throated opposition to what Trump did from Democrats? I'm not saying that that's not out there, but have you heard of it yet? Because I was thinking this morning when I heard about this that my natural reaction is to not be in favor of it because it's Trump that's doing it. But on the other hand, as a child of the baby boom generation who grew up through Vietnam and other wars, our instinct was no wars bring the troops home. And I'm wondering whether Democrats are saying that now, or they're recognizing what Vera is saying, that this is a case where you have to have troops.
So the only person I heard yesterday, and I haven't really paid close attention to U.S. senators or outgoing senators, but McCaskill did express, and she's on Armed Services Committee, outgoing now, but she expressed a full-throated opposition to this.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether they're just sort of lying low and let the Republicans beat up on each other.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Could be. So Travis says, Syria troop pullout. Can we expect backtracking by Trump on the impending troop withdrawal from Syria? It appears the backlash against the decision has been rather swift and somewhat bipartisan. Answering somebody's question.
I would think actually the way he's going to hopefully wiggle out of this one is to say, well, we will have a troop withdrawal, not immediately. We'll begin to discuss with our allies now. And, you know, he's just going to sort of begin the plan for that. He just apparently wanted this major announcement before the holidays, before he goes golfing at Mar-a-Lago.
So Jason says, Kurds, as usual, the U.S. is burning the Kurds, our only real friend. Look at World War I and many administrations since then. Jason C. from Ulster Park.
Well, I mean, that's how many of the Kurds are responding to this. In essence, they say, well, we were somewhat prepared for something, not as quickly to happen, but they have been discussing this and they're deeply worried, of course.
And Ed says, abrupt withdrawal from Syria. Now you understand why Putin is so strongly supported Trump in the 2016 election. It's payoff time. Vera is correct. The move could lead to a massacre of Kurds by Turkey and war between Israel and Iran. And that's Ed from Del Mar. And Ed says, P.S., look for some future Trump towers in Moscow and Istanbul.
Well, Istanbul already has Trump towers.
So if you think Trump's backtracking, at least this morning he was tweeting again that, this is a good idea. And he tweeted, Russia, Iran, and Syria should take care of ISIS now, not us.
Sure. Our friends, Russians.
Our friends and allies in the region.
Did you see the video he released?
Oh, I know. Oh. That's what he does now. He can't. You can't deal with reporters
right.
or questions.
Well, it was just,
it was just
gibberish, and it was embarrassing, and he was pointing to the sky because he was sort of paying homage to soldiers who have already been killed in the region.
Did he say mission accomplished behind
him? No, but he might have said that, and he said that we've won, and he said it again, we've won, and we beat them badly.
Joel says, Syria. Good morning. Two things, Re-Syria. One, it's another distraction from Mueller business. Mm-hmm. And two, it's Putin business. And that's from Joel in Blooming Grove, New York. I agree with him.
Yeah. Well, our new allies, Putin, Assad, Rouhani and Erdogan. What a foursome.
North Korea.
And what about
Duterte?
What about Duterte?
Well, I mean, they're not in the. I just mentioned the ones in the region, but certainly that's the larger. I mean, I don't know. It's just disturbing.
I don't understand something. There's a wonderful letter about Ira, and it doesn't seem to be here. Somebody really loved Ira.
Sarah's printing it out in large type.
Well, I don't get what happened. I read it. I was here.
Oh, is that the... Yeah,
it was on the email.
It's being embroidered on a pillow.
Yes. He's doing it. When I leave, it will be... Oh, this could be it.
Is it?
No,
is
I was reading it on a piece of paper.
Yeah, oh, yes, Ira gets a letter.
Oh, look, it's on the top.
Oh,
it's,
here
just
we go.
Arrived.
Oh, we're out of time.
And Jeremy says... Trump's motivation, good morning, panel. It's possible that Trump's withdrawal from Syria is a hasty, ham-fisted attempt to keep a campaign promise in the wake of the latest setback on the border wall. And that's Jeremy from Hurley, where everybody keeps it down.
Seems like that would make sense.
A lot of listeners in Ulster County.
What'd you say?
You say a lot of listeners in Ulster County. Hurley, Ulster Park.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
Well, so now that Trump says it's going to be the military that builds the wall, I guess he's going to use the soldiers coming back from...
Yeah, Trump imagines himself as having the powers of a dictator. I mean, he just says all these things that are not at all realistic.
Well, what about his idea that he can take the money from people's existing budgets? Maybe you don't build an aircraft carrier, maybe you build a wall.
Well, that's how he used his foundation money, apparently. That's that's what works for them. He doesn't seem to have any understanding how appropriations committees work or who has the right of the purse, namely Congress and not the president.
Well, who should have the right of the purse.
Well I just think that an action like this one is another example of what has led me to believe that he does not plan to seek re-election. That he's got all of the problems that he has legally going on, and he has a number of things that he wants to do, and he's going to do them while the going is good.
Or, on the other hand, I don't agree with you, Ira, even though I'm going to read a very nice letter about you.
I want people to keep remembering that I'm saying this so that if I'm right, I can say it.
Right. I don't think I agree with you, because I think if a guy is a little iffy in the mental department— He doesn't know whether he can win again next time. He won unexpectedly this time. Mm. Even he didn't expect it. So I don't know that
his ego would let him step down.
One other question I have largely about what's going on is, as much as I dislike John Bolton, where is John Bolton and his ferociously anti-Iranian containment policy? Where is that man?
Well, he may well be there, but Trump is not listening to Mattis. He's not listening to anybody. So what makes you think he'd listen to
Bolton? Like John Bolton, he should be ashamed if this policy goes forward. He should be resigning. I mean, he's a hard right hawk. Do these people not have any principles?
Well, let me read this. To calm everybody down, let me read this very nice letter about Ira, from Patricia, who says, Thursday is always a good day when Ira Fussfeld is on the panel. I love his trenchant. What does trenchant mean? Like big or?
Deep, right?
Deep
trenchant. Yeah. Okay, like a bill of trench. I love his trenchant commentary, his wit, intelligence, and his distinctive
vigorous
voice.
Vigorous and incisive, actually.
And his distinctive voice. The panel's is a great parenthesis, an addictive program, but it is especially fine when he is on the show. Thank you each and all from Patricia. Did you want to take a bow?
I think that's very nice. I don't know this person. I'm very, very flattered. Thank you.
You don't know your own aunt? So here we go.
I'll write back to her personally.
Hold on, I got to write one now.
So Lynn says, Trump sells Patriot missiles to Turkey. Erdogan is getting ready to slaughter the Kurds in northern Syria with our weapons.
Yeah, well, say no more.
Well, the Patriots are a defensive weapon, so in fact that means that Erdogan is worried about Syria coming back at him when he takes out the Kurds, Barisat. So he's preparing for that.
And
we're helping.
And Bill says if he can stop a war action on his own, he can start a war action all on his own. Look, folks, I happen to be very worried about this. We can kill him all we want.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. I mean, I am worried,
this is a guy
too.
Who is a distractor, we know that. Mm-hmm. And when the ultimate distraction is, should I push this particular button or should I go to jail? Hmm. We know what he'll do.
My only hope is the military begins to slow walk this whole thing.
Karen says, good morning, troop withdrawal. Whatever Trump based his decision on, I think that in the past, whenever a president made a foreign policy change, they at least tried to explain their reasoning to the American people. Trump just tossed it off with no real explanation. I feel as if he doesn't respect or care enough about the public to take time to explain his decisions until he gets criticized. Then he defends himself without facts. Really too bad. And that's from Karen.
And he didn't even take it to Congress. So traditionally, they at least inform the Foreign Services Committees.
Yeah, they were
and
really
the
ticked off about that.
These guys were all
well,
just
I mean,
like,
can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, major policy
and when
change.
Senator Corker
major policy change without consultation.
Yeah, Senator Corker went to the White House. He's the head of the committee in the Senate, and he was in the White House, and the meeting was canceled.
That is so trenchant.
Yes, and then think about like you're the general in the field, Votel, right? And you find out through Twitter what your new policy is. Are you freaking joking?
Now, well, I'm going to say something in defense of Twitter, although not necessarily the way he uses it. Twitter is an accepted way of communication to the masses, much like was radio when FDR was using it, and much like was TV when JFK started televising press conferences. We may look back in 50 years and say Twitter is now the accepted means of communication.
Hey, apparently that's how you communicate with your staff and your military and your foreign policy advisors.
Long gone.
Right. The alternative is
helping. Social media stories later today. But,
yeah, really.
Twitter's going to get
okay,
that
so
too.
Timothy says.
Let me take a break. We'll be right back.
In the meadow, we can build a snowman.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. We stopped to go to break from reading the letter, so we'll go back to reading those, and then we'll move on to other topics.
I will, Joe. Timothy says, morning panel, Trump's troop withdrawal is a Christmas gift to himself. The malignant narcissist has even gone as far as stating that the fallen Americans would thank him. Another silent majority? And Jamie says, Turkey wants to move against Trump and the Kurds, I suspect. Trump was bullied into believing that when it does, U.S. troops better not be in the way. Another effect of his spineless conduct came out of North Korea, who announced they're not giving up nukes as long as the U.S. is in South Korea and Japan. Surprise!
Yeah.
And then John writes, good morning. I'd have to agree with Alan that Assad won. He won when President Obama drew the red line and then didn't enforce it. And let's not forget who created the ISIS threat to begin with. I don't agree with Alan on his continued and partisan number one Russian conspiracy line. For there is no evidence of collusion with Russia by Trump. No evidence of collusion has surfaced. Iran also could have been deemed a winner when President Obama gave them a plane load of cash and removed sanctions, but allowed ICBM development. And then he says, best regards and happy holidays.
So I wanted to say one of the things that's really interesting is that there could be some arrangement between Turkey and the U.S., which is obviously very worrisome to the Kurds because they'll be the first ones to be victimized. But in essence, we should remember that this government in Turkey under Erdogan also gave protections to ISIS fighters that for a while went across Syrian Turkish border, the Syrian-Turkish border, to get treated in hospitals, and they had weapons support from elements within Turkey. So we are, in effect, giving some support, indirectly, to a regime that has the most journalists in prison among all countries in the world, has gone after its own academic population, fired people, marginalized people, murdered and tortured people. It is time to really pay close attention to what's going on inside of Turkey because that regime is increasingly repressive and clearly anti-democratic. It is one of those illiberal democracies where you have elections, but in fact, there's, the media controlled by the regime, and it is disturbing that we consider Erdogan's Turkey a close ally.
And the reason is because we have the air force bases in Turkey.
Injured and other air, you know, access. And, you know, of course, Turkey is part of NATO, which is a big, you know, problem now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Julie agrees with you. She says, don't forget that Trump talked to Erdogan just a few days before his decision, and Turkey has been massing their troops on the Syrian border recently. Yep. By now, it's become easy to read. Trump does things, money and wish to please dictators. JP from Oneonta.
Yep.
We heard from Daniel, who said, I do not disagree with any of the points made about Trump's motivation with regards to this reckless action. One of those motivations, however, is to distract attention from his increasing legal difficulties. Based on the first segment of the show, that one is working so far. I don't think that's fair, Daniel. We've mentioned this again and again. But okay, maybe you just tuned in.
I will tell you, I did find online somebody who is defending Trump's withdrawal. It's Christian Witten of Fox News, who just happened to have worked in the Trump White House for a while.
I think
he's
Paul,
the only one I can
Paul Rand
right
as well, I think.
Well, you know,
I've always said distrust people with two first names.
Yes, I think I saw him saying something as well.
But he's always said we shouldn't have any troops anywhere.
Yeah, I think he's principled in that sense, which, you know, I can sort of understand that argument, but I don't agree with it at this point after, you know, I'm just generally opposed to the U.S. government having its hands, involved in massacres. That's why I'm so critical of what's going on in Yemen. That's why I'm so critical with in terms of support for this Erdogan regime or any other authoritarian government that represses its own people or neighboring communities.
Well, regular writer Bob writes to us, has anybody else noticed that the Turks have been pretty quiet about the Khashoggi murder lately? Could their backing off MBS be the payoff for Trump abandoning the Kurds? Just wondering.
I turned on Hannity last night, as I felt my civic duty to
do. Why did you do that?
Just to get a taste of it. And Hannity was not on. I guess he's on vacation. And it was someone who I didn't recognize. Maybe it was this Witten fellow who you just quoted, Jim. But what were they talking about? Was it the Mueller probe? Was it Syria? No, they were talking about Loretta Lynch and Clinton's emails. This was their story.
Then let's give up.
All right, let's move on to some other stuff, talk about other issues, and there are a number of them. We will begin with the Fed raising rates, and we see the effect that so far has had on the market. The Fed raises interest rates, showing confidence in health of the economy. The economy. Its benchmark interest rate on Wednesday was raised and signaled that it expects additional rate increases next year in a display of measured confidence in the economy that came despite financial market worries and political pressure to suspend rate increases. Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, emphasized the continued strength of economic growth at a news conference after the announcement. He acknowledged new strains in recent months, including weaker growth in Europe and China and a downturn in stock prices. And he said the Fed expects slightly slower domestic growth and fewer rate increases next year. But he strongly defended the Fed's decision to increase rates. Mr. Powell said, quote, "We think this move was appropriate for what is a very healthy economy."
I got nervous, Joe, because when you were reading that, you looked up to the TV when you were relating the stock market. So we all looked up because we wanted to see where the stock market was today. It's a
Ford Tundra commercial.
No, it was somebody being carried out of something on a stretcher.
And I'm thinking, man, it's come to that. Well, it's only down 200
so far today. Is that what it is? Yeah. Well, it's early.
What is it? Is that 100?
200.
200.
Mm-hmm. Well, yesterday was up over 300 at some point, and then it went down to almost 400 down. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think as much as it is difficult to watch these stock numbers go down, as much as it's difficult, particularly when you're retired and that money is what we're living on, I just feel like I have enough confidence in the ins and outs of the economy as judged by the Fed that I'm willing to follow their lead, that this is for the better and it's for the long-term health of the economy. I mean, I'm just not an expert enough on this to suggest otherwise. But there's no doubt you get nervous when you see those numbers go down. I think the other thing is many people have been saying, and I'm among them, me, that the stock market was too high. It was just it was irrationally high, and now it may be going back to where it ought to be.
Well, and hate to turn it back to Trump again, but, you know, there were a lot of predictions that Trump's trying to meddle with them beforehand. So we said don't raise interest was really, if you're a bunch of independent advisors and you're sitting there going, hey, you know, he's not supposed to tell us what to do, it's got to have reinforced their decision to raise.
So you think they raised it?
I don't think only because, but I think if you were wavering.
Yeah.
And now you have a political reason suddenly to also do it. I mean, I wish he'd keep his mouth closed about things that he's supposed to keep his mouth closed
A number of things, but you know.
He probably thinks that about me if he ever heard of me.
Keep wishing that, Jim. Yeah.
Who's that tetherless guy?
I thought it was
when
so.
When I become the new chief of staff.
Oh, well, there you go. I thought it was so crazy yesterday when Trump was making some comment about how the feds should be feeling the market and should not rely on their statistics so much. I'm thinking, what kind of a feeling do you have as a multimillionaire? Our feeling is we'd like to have a stabilized market, and you know, as people who hope to put a little bit of money into the stock market, perhaps, or you know, for those that are worried about the fact that after the last recession, we have enormous numbers of people on part-time contracts, and they were not rehired on permanent jobs. So people are quite concerned about what their future looks like. And I think I'm simply tired of this president making untethered remarks about, you know, where the economy is at and how good it is and how everything should be just, you know, done by emotion or feeling or whatever gut instinct he has that has nothing to do with all our gut instincts.
Well, it just feeds into, you know, I know Alan keeps reminding us that he must be smart, he meaning Trump, because he got himself elected. But I just think that so many of these things, such as what Vera just described, prove that this guy has no there.
What does that mean? First of all, I take great exception to your saying I think he's smart. I think he's a terrible human being.
Yes, but you said he was elected.
I said, when you guys say how stupid he is, he got himself elected president of the United States.
He is very media savvy, and
I think you cannot ignore that.
Well, I think he caught lightning in a bottle. I would not attribute that to him being smart. He knows how to work the media, and he ran against somebody, despite the fact that she did have more.
But he didn't know it, Ira. That's the whole point. Now listen, man. You may be trenchant, but that doesn't mean you're right.
We will have to agree to disagree.
No, we won't.
I think we'll take a break.
I think and we'll be better.
We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we have Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Jim Hendler, and Vera Akarios-Kelly. We'll go to letters and then move on to other topics.
Okay, Joe. Don says, an embarrassment to our country and a danger to the world. In a recent interview, former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that Trump is pretty undisciplined, doesn't like to read, and repeatedly attempted to do illegal things. When one considers Trump's actions on the international scene, the conclusion is that he is an embarrassment to our country and a danger to the world.
I thought Rex Tillerson got a raw deal. I mean, he went to work for this guy, and this is what he encountered. And here's somebody who ran one of the major corporations in the world. You know, as David Letterman would say, they don't give these jobs to chimps. And you know, I think his reputation coming out of that White House was somehow that he's a doofus. I think that's unfair.
So let me say this to you, Ira. I disagree with you.
Mm.
And here's why. I think he got what he deserved.
Well, what you mean by taking the job to begin with?
Can I also say that Rex Tillerson is solely responsible for running the State Department into the ground, for having caused the departure of some of our most senior diplomats.
Yeah.
He treated the State Department as if it was his oil company.
Well, that's a good point. He tried to run it like a business, and he started cutting jobs.
He failed. He was miserable at it. And you know what? He is certainly an intelligent man, but he was not prepared to run an agency of the U.S. government.
Yeah. So now, who called who stupid? One of them called. He called
him an effing moron.
And then Trump, well, that was during his time there. And then Trump, in response to the comment about him not reading, he said that the president said that Tillerson was dumb as a box of rocks.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is unbelievable. That's why I prepare my young students that are interested in international affairs, and I talk to them about applying for the State Department, taking State Department exams, and so on, because 5 to 10 years from now, we need to completely rebuild the State Department. Our experts are jumping off the ship.
Yeah. Well,
what if you got a Trump who basically disowns the State Department and says they're no good, and you got your wonderful students applying for jobs, but you're telling them, of course, that when you have a president like Trump, bad news, right, in terms of the honor of the department.
But in the next 5 years, the State Department will experience a crisis of not having experts, regional experts, linguistic experts. I mean, there is no way but to rebuild
the State
Department.
Of course you're right.
So I tell my students, think about your future, think about the opportunities that will emerge, because there are so many gaps now in the government agencies across the board.
Now, Derek says 2020. Ego aside, Trump is a self-preservationist and will always put himself first. His only option is to stay out of jail, is to bow out. It won't be graceful, and he will attempt to spin it in his favor, but he will make a deal not to run in 2020 in order to save his own skin. Good day, Derek. Now, this is so interesting, isn't it? It's so interesting because you have to go back to Nixon and Agnew and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Agnew gets persuaded to leave. Nolo Contendere, as you remember, took bribes before he even got to be vice president. Then in comes the president appoints Ford. Ford pardons Nixon. Now, the question for all of you is, of the day, is it likely that any vice president is ever going to do a pardon like that? Because if they do, they'll end up losing like Ford lost, for exactly that reason.
If Trump believes in his own mind that he has no choice but to get out because he's done all of these things, and then he wants a pardon, he's going to have to get out before this term is up, because I believe Pence will give him a pardon, because the next president of the United States may well be a president from the other party, and he won't get a pardon.
But do you remember all the comments that Trump had or made about he questioned the loyalty of his vice president there a while ago? Apparently, he's not so sure if he can get a pardon from his VP.
Well, Derek says, we did that one. Thank you, Derek, for that. And then Jamie, sorry, but Twitter is the inside ramblings of the new news industry and nothing more. Makes everyone a publisher, editor, and a columnist all in one. And look at the bright side, no one ever disagrees. Well, they disagree. People
constantly only disagree.
Okay. And Michael says, if someone would please entertain my ignorance, what is Russia's angle? Long game in Syria? In other words, why are they there? Vera, over to you.
So Russia is profoundly interested in having a strong relationship with the Syrian regime, which it does, for access to warm water in terms of its fleet, for having some element of control over the Middle East. Basically, what they're trying to do is get a stronger foothold in the Middle East to have access to resources, have access to warm water ports, and have access to various regimes. So Russia could easily replace the United States in the larger region as the predominant power, and that is what Putin wants.
I have nothing else, Joe.
All right, then let's move on to other topics, and because we have many of those, we'll go to this story and about Facebook. a lot going on. So I'm going to turn to Jim Henler on this subject. As Facebook raised a privacy wall, it carved out an opening for tech giants. Internal documents show that the social network gave Microsoft, Amazon, Spotify, and others far greater access to people's data than it has disclosed. Jim, what should we make of this?
Well, you know, we have a technical term in the field for some of this stuff. We call it creepy.
Yeah.
This is so, you know, there's been a lot of things where people have said this happens a lot. And we've said, well, you know, maybe algorithms. So, for example, you've been visiting some friend. They're telling you about something they bought, or you're saying, I'm thinking about buying something, and then suddenly it starts showing up on your Facebook feed.
I just used that example on a media project.
Yeah, so it turns out that, in fact, you weren't, I mean, so we were saying, well, you know, they guess trends. Things like, no, it turns out one of your friends bought it. They can do it. You were thinking about it. Chances are your friends are. But it's so when you go to a website now, tons and tons of things are looking over your shoulder. Actually, kudos to Alan and WAMC. I checked this morning. There are only things that track performance, nothing in there that's selling out to other things. But when you go to buy shoes online, 30 different companies who you've never heard of are taking the data that you've been there, what you've done, they're passing it around, they're sharing it. So this is what creates this huge advertising economy. But what turns out is these giants have been working together behind the scenes. So if you have an Alexa, here's every word you say, right? You've said to Amazon, you're allowed to listen to me. What we didn't know is you were also essentially talking not just for you, but for all your Facebook friends, for all of the friends of the friends. So you create these big networks, and we know how to analyze these networks and use them to influence things. There's a lot of discussion going on now about what impact these companies have had in elections. And there's actually an argument going on between Nate Silver and some other people about, you know, Nate says it's a negligible amount, but there's been a lot of research that says for people who are undecided, even small nudges, right? So you don't have to click on an ad, you just have to see it. So again, that's how when the Russians got into Facebook, they're now able to get to a lot of other places too. And it turns out all of these deals going on behind the scenes had many more large companies sharing much more data. So I do a lot of policy stuff in my spare time. And I run something called the so I'm chair of the Association of Computing Machinery. I have something called the U.S. Technology Policy Committee. And we've been arguing for a long time that we need to start looking at regulation of these companies. We have to do it carefully and we have to do it smart. But this notion that tech is the innovation engine that runs our economy, we're discovering that just like all the old monopolies, once they reach a certain point in power, they stop worrying so much about the country and start worrying about themselves. And they've been really doing this.
On the media project this morning, I duked it out with everybody. We talked about whether or not the Congress, you know, ought to be setting up regulations that would make this. And of course, there's going to be an argument and a pushback.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't let them do regulations on the press, and this is just a new form of the press.
Well, but we do have regulations on the press. We have significant regulations on the press, like you can't libel somebody, you can't slander somebody, you have to be careful about false advertising. If you take a political ad, you have to say who supported it. Mm-hmm. The political ads on Facebook don't tell you, you know, my name is Joe Schmo and I support this ad.
Right.
Right.
You make a series of good points there.
So
very
we
trenchant.
Could regulate it more like a tradition. Mm-hmm. So there's been some proposals. There's something out there now. Mm-hmm. A couple of congressmen are circulating something called the Internet Bill of Rights. So one of the questions is, how much control should you have over your own information? And that's the other difference with tech. So when you I subscribe to your newspaper, I see the ads in your newspaper, right? You don't know whether I've bought something from one of those ads. You don't know. Your advertisers are guessing your demographics. Mm-hmm. We have that now absolutely precise, down to the person, down to their friends, down to how much they paid. If two of us go to the same site and look at the same product, we'll get different prices based on their prediction of how likely we are to buy it. I mean, these kind
it's of so prices.
And you can't do that in the traditional media.
So one of the things you made me think of was the question of so many people say, oh, we don't need regulation for these industries because they self-regulate. And I think it has become it has been become crystal clear that they don't self-regulate, that they're not keeping the common good in mind, and that's why we need governmental regulations
The government keeps the common good in mind?
Well, they're expected to because they are our elected representatives, are they not?
Well, they are, but they don't keep the common good in mind. I can tell you that right now. Right. Well,
so the European Union created a set of privacy laws, GDPR it's called. And, you know, you go over there, when you go on a website, it actually has to put up something that says, you know, we use these things called cookies, but if you click on it, it actually says, here's who we sell your data to, here's what kind of data we sell. So a lot of those companies are suddenly disincentivized because their big worry is, hey, wait, you know, I'm competing with someone and I'm telling you I'm sharing your information, I'm selling, and they're not. So they're finding that there's some pushback now from the consumers who are seeing this stuff, who said, you know, this regulation is good. We understand this. We like this. It's putting more of the control of our data back in our own hands.
But, of course, Jim, they're arguing that you sign that little thing at the end. You just say, I agree, even though you don't read it.
Well, so GDPR actually says those things have to be readable, and there's some rules about it. A lot of it still has to get tested.
And here in the U.S., what's interesting, I think, is that you click the little thing on the bottom, and you say you agree, but you have never agreed to having your data shared with third and fourth and fifth parties.
Right. So the Facebook one, the interesting thing is they have a privacy policy you've agreed to. Most people haven't read it. I actually have. It's pages and pages, it's very complicated, and a lot of small link in there. But you know, one of the things it says in there is we're allowed to change this policy without telling you. So essentially, you have to be the one monitoring the policy, not them doing it. They got in trouble for that when they made a major change and didn't tell people. So they've at least done that. But now it turns out that some of the stuff they were doing may or may not have been violating their own policies. Looks very much like they were violating the consent decree they had with the government. So, in fact, they're now being sued in D.C. court. So, again, we're going to see how this plays out. But, you know, Facebook is one company of this very large ecosystem. And this ecosystem has been unregulated, very trusted, and now we're learning that maybe they shouldn't have been trusted as much.
And why do you think it is that Europeans have been so much more concerned about their privacy, whereas Americans seem to have said, well, you know, whatever I share on Facebook, it's okay. It's really, you know, anybody can look at it and see it. Do you think this is a cultural thing?
I think some of it's cultural. I think some of it's interesting. So, for example, in the UK, far more cameras are watching you all the time, but they're also much more upset about online privacy. So again, different kinds of privacy that differentiate people in different ways.
Now, I asked this question on the Media Project. Do you think that there's a distinction between what some print entities have historically done and what we're talking about with the internet and what the print industry has historically done? Not all of them, but some, is sell their subscription lists to companies, and then that's why you're generating a lot of what we would affectionately call junk mail from advertisers.
Yeah. So again, that's a large part of the online economy has been exactly that kind of stuff. And the fact that we now have computers that can take huge amounts of that data, chunk through it, use the information that I'm following Vera on Twitter, you and I are Facebook friends, can put a lot of that together if they can get their hands on it. And what they've been very interested in is also getting their hands on things like purchasing information, preferences. So again, now it turns out Netflix is looking at it. So you watch a movie, we're Facebook friends, Netflix is showing me maybe that I want to watch that movie. That doesn't sound like a bad thing until you start thinking about just what's involved in it and how much of that information is. And, you know, that's being used to figure out who's going to vote for what. That's going to be used to figure out how to nudge people to vote. So when TV came along in the early days, there was a lot of subliminal advertising. It's now moved to a different kind of subliminal advertising, product placement and things like that. But at least, you know, we sort of trained our kids, learn the difference between a commercial and a program. Nowadays, you don't have to because your kids don't see commercials, but that's a different issue. So again, it's just a very changing world out there, and it's been sort of this assumption that regulation would slow change. And I think the notion that so what I find is when I explain to people, when I say to people, your privacy, et cetera, they don't get very upset. When I say you and your wife might see different prices when you go to buy the airplane tickets, people start saying, wait, what? When I start saying now with this, you know, you were in someone's house with an Alexa. You talked about some product. It's going to show up in your Facebook feed. Mm-hmm. People are like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Right, and that's the thing. A lot of it is awareness, and I think in Europe they were more aware to some
perhaps
degree.
That's true. Other thing I'm really deeply concerned about is the question of this technology being used as a way to surveil citizens in many countries that are entirely undemocratic or repressive. I mean, increasingly, absolutely. you can watch people be inside their homes, monitor what they say, who they are in contact with. And this is something that is deeply distressing for political activists in many countries. And our companies based in the United States are helping those repressive countries use that technology against their own citizens.
So I would talk for hours about this if I could, but I see Alan has new letters, so we'll let him go back to that.
No, I just...
Well, I mean, I give courses on this, so this is like we're talking about Syria.
I feel like I'm auditing a class at RPI.
Yeah, I know.
That's what our tether was.
I feel like we should do a course together.
We should.
It is so interesting because there are things that we don't think about. Sure. For example, think about the constant reminder on National Public Radio, on their time on the radio, that you can tell your Alexa to tune in to NPR or to your local station. Well, we've got to give NPR $1 million of our up to $1 million now of what we're getting, and yet this is obviously an onslaught trying to get our people, you know, to give and to get to National Public Radio. So there's a lot of that stuff. You're right about that.
Alexa, send money to WAMC. So now everyone in the listening area has an Alexa in their house.
Oh, that's
it's just that that happened.
Oh, good. Okay.
So yeah, what, no, that's true. Yeah.
What letters do we
have? Yeah, let's go.
Oh, you want more letters?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Okay.
Anything there about me?
It's what we call a runaway jury. Peter says, section hacking, American style. Read New York Times Today front page piece about a U.S. cybersecurity firm, quote, experimenting with manipulating social media. Mm-hmm. Facebook in Alabama race between Doug Jones and Roy Moore.
There you go.
Should we not be worried about this domestic use of Russian methods? And that's from Peter C.
We should be very worried about this, yes.
Okay. And that's a good answer. Hattie says Trump won the election, quotes. Hello. It still doesn't always and always will aggravate every time it is said that Trump won an election. Yeah. With 2,864,903 fewer votes than Hillary Clinton, he did not win. He was handed a victory by members of the Electoral College. The vast number of voters who cast their ballot for Hillary were basically told their vote did not matter. And that's from Harriet in Craigsmore.
Well, Hillary is out walking a dog in Chappaqua, so I don't think she won either, even though the listener obviously is correct that she got more votes.
Without question.
Next.
Okay, and Ira says, not you, you didn't write. Oh, no, yeah. The subject is Ira.
Ira, another one.
The subject is Ira. I admire Ira for turning on Fox News. I do so occasionally, as Rosemary said we should. It is really amazing how different Fox News differs from other news broadcasts. It's worth turning in if you can control the nausea. And that's from Virginia.
Well, you know, seriously, if you are still wondering why Trump has whatever support he has, you have to watch Fox News because people are watching it. Typically older people, and they're mesmerized by it, and they believe it.
Yeah, it's alt news.
And Mike says, Syria, I swear people will do anything the opposite of Trump. People who wanted out of the Middle East are now warmongers and are mad about the withdrawal.
No, we're not warmongers. We're hoping to make sure that we don't have a massacre against Kurds and wars between the Syrians and the Turks, and that the Iranians and Russians are meddling even more. Okay. We're worried about an enormously violent explosion in the Middle East.
And Mike goes on, wake up, people. This is positive and a good step towards peace we so dearly need. In other words,
no, this is not a step towards peace. This is a step towards mayhem and war.
And finally, we heard from Richard, who wanted to talk about Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson, suppressed evidence of climate catastrophe, which is killing life on Earth. And that's from Rich Jr. Thank you, Rich.
Not all quite right. As bad as Inky.
Now gone. All right. Final 2 minutes on government shutdown. Tomorrow is the day. Senate passes a bill to keep government open until February, undercutting Trump's drive for the border wall funding. Now it's up to the House. What do you think?
I predicted it wouldn't happen, and it's not going to happen.
Well, he still hasn't signed. Trump has not signed any bills yet.
That's right. Can you imagine he goes golfing in Mar-a-Lago and his Secret Service people don't get paid while watching and guarding and making sure he doesn't get himself in any trouble? That would be a great image.
Shut my mouth.
If he in fact does sign it, that might be the reason why he does. Not for any good reason, but because he doesn't want to blow the vacation.
Stop it. The reason he's going to sign it is because it blew up in his face. That's why he's going
to
sign it.
He's got to spin this the right way. Mm-hmm. He will attempt.
He tried.
He will
try.
Well, I mean, that's why he may have come up with the Syria policy.
Yes,
because
possible.
You know the wall is not happening. The government shutdown didn't pan out the way he thought. Now let's come up with a new alternative way to control media.
And I would just point out, and this is good news for us for trying to find things to talk about on the show during the holidays. But just because he's on vacation doesn't mean that the tweeting's going to stop and the erratic behavior is going to stop.
That's right.
I mean, we have seen this in the past. Just because he's away and quote unquote on vacation, that doesn't really change
anything.
So my
recommendation is this. Why doesn't Melania give us a holiday gift by taking the Twitter machine away from her husband?
Well, good luck with that. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Thank you, Vera. Have a lovely holiday. Travel safely.
Thank you.
We will see you in the new year. Jim, we will see you soon. Thank you very much. Be well. Ira, thank you very much. We'll see
My
you soon,
pleasure.
I believe. Yes.
Thank
and
you.
Alan, thank you very much. We will be back right after this.